Good morning and welcome to another edition of Mornings for the Master here on the Gospel Radio Network. I'm your host this morning, Richard Rutledge, and I thank you for joining today. Well, today starts our new year of study. We are looking and hoping to go through our New Testament in 2017. Get used to saying that. We were looking last year, in 2016, we went through the New Testament in that time period. We went through chapter by chapter. Every chapter of the New Testament was studied that last year on Mornings for the Master. This year, our goal is the Old Testament. Now, the Old Testament's going to be a little bit different. We're not going to be able to go into it as in-depth where we're going to go chapter by chapter, but we're going to try to do our best to do a fair representation of the study as we go through. We're going to be breaking up these books into basically topics of study, going through highlighted sections, and see how that works. But that is our goal. So stick with us. Make it your plan that you're going to study through the Old Testament with us this year. And Lord willing, we will all benefit from this time of study together. This morning, our attention will be in Genesis chapter 1, the book of beginnings. We're going to start there in the very beginning. We're going to note several things today as we go through. We're going to highlight the creation this morning. We're going to have chapter 1 all the way through chapter 2, verse 3. Although we know that that creation or an image of the creation is seen, some of the more information in chapter 2, where it is more in-depth about Adam and Eve, but we're going to be looking specifically through the 6 days and that seventh day of rest this morning. And so we're glad that you are able to be with us. Hope that you have your Bibles handy, maybe a notepad with you. You can take some notes, study along. Don't forget, though, we normally like to start things out with the bulletin board, but it's that time of year when things have slowed down. We don't have a lot on the bulletin board. The only thing we want to put in your ear is that first Saturday in February will be the Make Me a Servant workshop here in Mount Vernon. So mark your calendars for that. We'll give you more information as it develops. But for now, we're going to start into our study this morning. Before we get into the text, just a few thoughts about this book. We can, as I mentioned a moment ago, call it the Book of Beginnings, the Genesis. It's actually divided up very easily into the Book of Generations. We're going to see several times through this book, these are the generations of, and they'll be to follow. And so it almost divides up here in the beginning with Adam and his, and then with Noah and his, and Abraham and his, and so on as we go through. But if we think about what begins in this book, well, right here we're going to see this morning that the universe begins and its population begins with man and beast being created. We see the beginning of sin and the beginning of death in chapter 3. We see the beginning of a promise of redemption in chapter 3 as well. We see the beginning of sacrifice offered in chapter 4. We also see the beginning of civilizations as they begin to develop from 4 to chapter 9. We see the beginning of languages in chapter 10 and 11. And then we'll also see the beginning of that Jewish nation by the fact of Abraham and his call and his promise, even in this chapter. So there are a lot of things about this book of beginnings that we're going to note. There are also things that some who have dismissed about this book. And primarily, there are those who would like to hold to a religious view. In other words, they want to believe in God, but not completely believe God. They want to take chapters 1 through 11 and make them either mythical or allegorical in some way and dismiss the factual evidence and the fact of these chapters, especially this 6 days of creation that we're going to look at this morning. But there's a problem with that, and that is that if you dismiss and that view that some would hold is a view called theistic evolution. In other words, God created the stuff, but there was a long period of time, eons and eons of time between these days. And so it was millions and millions and millions of years, not literal 24-hour days. But if we dismiss chapters 1 through 11, which go and talk about creation and the fall of man and the flood and God's destroying the earth or the inhabitants of the earth and saving those eight souls, then we also have to dismiss much of the New Testament because, you know, Ryan, we have Jesus talking in Matthew chapter 24 and using as an illustration, he says in verses 38 and 39, just as in the days of the flood. You know, he's referring back to it as a historical event. Paul, in that 1 Corinthians chapter 15, he talks about there in verse number 45, the first man, Adam, was made a living soul, and the last Adam, talking about Jesus, was made a quickening spirit. He references Adam as a real individual. The Hebrew writer, we have to dismiss Hebrews, the book of Hebrews because of Hebrews chapter 11, where, you know, going from verse 3, talking about Abel, going through verse 8, talking about Noah. So we have to dismiss that. We have to dismiss, you know, what Peter said in, you know, 2 Peter chapter 3. You know, he talks about the fact that the world was destroyed, and they understood that. You know, there were going to be scoffers in the last time saying that the world had continued. So we dismiss the teachings of Peter. We dismiss the teachings of Paul. We dismiss the teachings of whoever the Hebrew writer was, even if it was, you know. We dismiss the teachings, even the factual teachings of Jesus. We must disregard everything if we disregard anything.
Right. Yeah, that's just that reminder. When we come to Genesis chapter 1, if we begin to discredit in verse 1, you might as well throw the whole book out.
Exactly.
And too many have lost the basis of any belief in the New Testament because we've allowed school systems, we've allowed poorly constructed Bible class material, even at times, to destroy faith, beginning right here in these first few chapters.
And it is. This is the, you know, this is that foundation. You know, the Hebrew writer says in Hebrews chapter 11, there in verse 1, that faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen, that there's something that holds. There's a foundation there. And you know what? We have to build a foundation. And if we destroy the foundation here of Genesis chapter 1, the whole thing is destroyed. Mm. And, you know, can we scientifically prove any creation theory? Yeah, well, we can't, because in order for the, you know, scientific method to take place, not only do you have to be able to duplicate, but you have to be able to observe. Hmm. And you can't observe the creation that has already taken place. It's not observable as far as that way. Mm-hmm. Now, we can observe the evidences that God has left and shows the creation, and his creative power is clearly seen, and that's what he says in Psalm 19. Mm-hmm. You know, the power of his creation is clearly seen. There's not a place on this planet where the language is not understood. Psalm 19, 1 through 3 talks about that. Mm-hmm. So the fact is we can look at these things. And so that's what we want to do this morning. We're going to go through these days. We're going to maybe make a few points about the things that are going on, even a few points about why this long day theory is false. And maybe even look at some other aspects of the creation from outside sources. So let's get started this morning, and let's jump on in to chapter 1. And, well, let's read the first five verses.
In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. So the evening and the morning were the first day.
All right. Oh, I forgot, you know, and those who may, don't forget to join us in the chat box and share thoughts and comments as we go through. But in the beginning, starts right there. I mean, John reminds us of what was going on in the beginning. When we're there in John chapter 1, verses 1 through 3, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. Now we find out later who he's speaking of. The Word that he's speaking of, verse 14, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. We beheld him as the only begotten of the Father. And so Jesus is present in the beginning. In the beginning, this takes place, and God created the heavens and the earth. In Hebrews chapter 1, in verse number 3, who, being the brightness of his glory and the express image of his person, and upholding all things by the word of his power, when he had by himself purged our sins and sat down on the right hand of his majesty. You know, he's not only the one who created, but he's the one who continues to uphold this world. And so he says, here was the heaven and the earth, and God is now moving and working to create. Notice it says, the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the earth, and the Spirit of God hovered over the face of the waters, and God said, let there be light. Now, we see that from John 1, Jesus, the Spirit of God hovering upon the face of the earth, and God says, let there be. Now, we'll see him later, let us make man in our own image. But the fact is that the Godhead is working here in this creation. And God said, let there be light. And so now the light is created. You know, we teach our kids a song. You know, I think we get into this idea that it's a children's song, and it is. But when you ask people, okay, what happened on day five? Well, there's a lot of adults that can't tell you, but kids can. Why? Because they know the creation song. You know, and when we think about it, here we are. Day one, God made light when there was none. So, you know, God is now making and separating light from darkness in this point of time. Now, as we move through, though, we get to day two. Yeah, go ahead.
Here's a question here as far as what that light is in verse 3, because we won't see the generators, if you will, until day 4. Any comments that we can throw out on that, maybe?
Well, again, you know, we can speculate, and that's all we can really do. When a lot of times we'll get into these discussions with this. Okay, well, what was this light, and how was the darkness, and what was, you know, if the sun, because we don't see the sun, moon, and stars created until later. You know, that's not until day four that happens. So, like you said, the generators are not there, so how can we have this light? Now, we can have this discussion, and we can say, well, it was this. Or, no, it wasn't that, it was this. And all we're doing is speculating. So, I mean, to even for us to get into there and to even say those things with any authority, we can't. Because the Bible doesn't reveal that. And so, you know, sometimes you get into those Deuteronomy 29:29 moments, the secret things belong to God. There are some things that he didn't reveal to man, but the things that he did reveal to us were necessary in that. You know, so, in my opinion, to go to that, you know, to say that it is something or is not something, then you know, we've gone beyond what the Scripture reveals.
And that's my general idea there, is that I have not, I guess, given that much thought to verse 3, other than God did have this creation of what was light and what was darkness, that definition, but he actually, in his perfect order, created that which was going to generate that light, and he set that in order on day 4.
I mean, we can speculate to the you know, God is light, the his glory shines. I mean, we can, you know, the separation through that, God's presence, and so in God's presence there is no darkness. So therefore, I mean, what are we getting at? Again, nothing can be said that is not speculation, because God did not reveal it to us. But then he called it the first day. We know that it's the evening and the morning. There is a time period that is given here, and he calls it a day. And he saw, you know, he called the light day and the darkness night. We have those again.
again, something just to add there quickly is you have the idea, and it's not just light that's being created. In a sense, God there is establishing the very definition of time.
He is.
With that, that does not rule an eternity, but now we have that definition of what's going to be a day, what's going to be night, and all of these things are being set into place. So.
Right, and, you know, the idea of eternity, there's something that is eternal, you know, it doesn't die, but eternity has no beginning, no end, you know. Mm-hmm. And so he's made something different than that, mm-hmm. And he's established now there's time barriers, and time barriers are for us here. They're going to end one, you know, we're not going, once we reach the eternal home, there's not going to be any night there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the idea that the gates are never going to be closed. Why? Because we're not bound by time restrictions. But God has set now these time restrictions in the beginning and created day and night. But notice now, let's look at day two. Day two, as our song that we teach our children, God made clouds and skies of blue on day two.
Then God said, "Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters." Thus God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament, and it was so. God called the firmament heaven, so evening and the morning were the second day.
And now this is an interesting verse for me. You know, here when he's dividing this and making the clouds and the skies. He's making this separation there, these firmaments. But notice what it says in verse number, the midst of the waters, he divided this firmament there in verse number 6. He divided the waters from the waters. So therefore, there's a water below and a water above. God made the firmament, he divided the waters which were under from the waters which were above the firmament. And that I believe in there we can see even some evidence of these long lifespans, mm-hmm. That were pre-flood long lives. Because we don't see rain mentioned until the heavens open up and then that firmament above goes down. Many believe it was like a terrarium, you know, an atrium.
Water canopy,
you know, that really protected the earth and it mm-hmm. kept it, you know, in a self-watering type environment. Think about it, the ozone was not coming through as bad. And all of that going on here as he separates this out. And so now he makes these atmospheres and the atmospheric conditions and things that are going on now in day two. Day three, then, it tells us that he's going to make, well, we tell our children, God made plants and flowers and trees.
Then God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth grass, the herb that yields seed, and the fruit tree that yields fruit according to its kind, whose seed is in itself on the earth." And it was so. And the earth brought forth grass, and the herb that yields seed according to its kind, and the tree that yields fruit, whose seed is in itself according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. So the evening and the morning were the third day.
All right, now this is our first peg that we really have to drive home here. In this idea of dismantling the eon theory, this idea that each day was not a literal 24-hour day. Because what happens here on day three is, you know, God has made the dry land appear, but he's also made the vegetation appear. He's made the plants, and he's made the plants and what they're going to do. He talks about how they're going to produce. They're going to have their seed, and their seed is going to produce other. And so the law of sowing and reaping is here. You know, the seed, it drops and it grows more. But this happens on day three. Mm-hmm. Now, this is critical for the fact that plants need certain things to survive and certain things to propagate. And some of these things we're not going to see for just a little while. So we have this creative part of God's hand making the plants in day three. Now, day four, what takes place? Day four, we tell our children, God made sun and moon and stars galore. Go ahead.
Then God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth. And it was so. Then God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. And God set them in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth and to rule over the day and over the night and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. So the evening and the morning were the fourth day.
All right. Now, in order for plants to survive, in order for plants to produce the necessary energy for them, they go through and go through photosynthesis. They take the sun and generate from it. So they need the sun in order to survive. I've got some plants right now that we put into a storage room because of the winter. And we want to keep them through until the spring. I have grow lights in there, and I have heat lamps in there to keep them alive. And if I were to go in there and turn those lights off, those plants aren't going to survive very long. They're not going to be alive come spring. And so when I think about this, you know, this idea that it wasn't just a day, but it was instead a million years. It's not going to be able to survive in darkness for a million years, you know, without the sunlight in order to produce these things. I don't think it would survive 1,000 years or 100 or even one. When my plants are dying and looking real pitiful, when I accidentally unplug the cord that lights this little area up, I accidentally unplugged it, and I realize it nearly a week later, and I go back in, and they're looking pretty pitiful. But here it needs, the plants were created on day three. They needed the sun that was created on day four, but that's not all they needed. And we're going to see what else happens in day five. Day five, God made fish and birds that fly.
Then God said, let the waters abound with an abundance of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the face of the firmament of the heavens. So God created great sea creatures and every living thing that moves, with which the waters abounded according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters in the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth. So the evening and the morning were the fifth day.
All right. Now, on day five, you know, we look at the idea that he made the fish and the birds. He made the sea life, but he also made the air life. Okay. We kind of look at bird and we forget about, he's not talking about just bird. He's talking about those who by locomotion fly, whether it be a bat. You know, some have said, well, a bat's not a bird. A bat's a mammal. Well, he's not talking about the genus. He's not talking about, you know, what they are. He's talking about how they move. And that's the idea of the word there. It's the idea that it is moved and propelled by locomotion of flight. And at that period of time as well, then, not only did he create the birds and the bats, but he created the bugs that fly, the bees that we need. So with the birds and the bats and the bees were all created that day. And those flying insects play a significant role in the propagation of plants. The plant life and the pollination of the plant life is sustained by the bee traffic and the insect traffic that carries the pollination from one to another. Again, if we have these long eons of time in between, this doesn't happen. The plants were created on day three. By the time the sun comes out a million years later, the plants are already dead. But by the time the bees are created on day five, then there's no plant to propagate. So, you know, sometimes these things just don't make common sense.
And two theories can run through there, and this hits both of them. It's the idea either these were 24 hours of days over long periods of time that aren't necessarily, you know, day one was thousands of years of 24-hour days. or these were long days. But even either theory, like you said, you're going to kill the plants, or if they're the many, many 24-hour days, you still don't have the propagating insects, the bees and the birds and all these things that are spreading the seeds and pollinating. And so you're attacking everything that could be a possibility other than simply what God has revealed. This is how it was, and this is how it was created.
Exactly. And so then we get to day six. In day six, or as the when we sing it, we say sixth day, God made animals and man that day.
And God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature according to its kind, cattle and creeping thing and beasts of the earth, each according to its kind. And it was so. And God made the beast of the earth according to its kind, cattle according to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let us make man in our image according to our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle of over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God he created him, male and female he created them. Then God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it, have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And God said, see, I have given you every herb that yields seed, which is on the face of all the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seed, to you it shall be for food. Also to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth in which there was life, I have given every green herb for food. And it was so. Then God saw everything that he made, and indeed it was very good. So the evening and the morning were the sixth day.
All right. Several things just jump out in this, and the fact that God says there, you know, he's making the creeping things. He's making the land-dwelling animals at this period of time. But who also dwells upon the land is man. Mm-hmm. And God says, let us, the plurality of the statement, let us make God in our image. Make God, make man in our image. And notice what he says, that man is going to have dominion over beast. Mm-hmm. There's something different, and there's something about man that places him above animal. Man, today, the day and age we live in today, mm-hmm. we turn the television on, and you know, they're talking about the animal like it's a mm-hmm. child. I mean, the Bible also teaches that the righteous man has concern about his animals, about his beast, but the fact is they're not equal, mm-hmm. Not equal to one another by any means. Man is to have dominion over these beast of the field and the animals. Now, he also, something else I want us to jump at is there in verse number 29. Not only is he to have some dominion over the earth, but he also has given food to eat. Mm-hmm. You know, God has told him, verse number 29, what he's going to give him to eat. And at this point in time, and we see that, you know, death has not entered into the world yet. And what is he given? Man is given the vegetation to eat. He is eating the fruit and the vegetables and things of that nature. It's not until later that we see that first command given for man. And that's when Noah comes off the ark in Genesis chapter 9, in verse number 3. He said, every moving thing that lives shall be meat to you, even as the green herb I have given you all things. So he's given here, he says, now at this point in time, I have given you every herb that yields the seed on the face of all the earth, and every tree whose fruit is in the seed, to eat, to you it shall be for food. And in chapter 9, after the flood, now God tells Noah, not only is it this, but it's everything that liveth shall be the meat for you, just as the herb was. And so here, man is now consuming the vegetation. He is basically a vegetarian. And also to every beast of the air and to everything that creeps upon the earth, I have given every green herb for food. So even at that point in time, the animal kingdom was eating the same thing. God has not dictated for that yet because, again, death has not entered in into this world. And so then let's jump quickly now. One other thing I want us to look at. There in verse number 28, God said, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. The King James, I think, says replenish the earth. That word there has been a sign of contention before, and that's the idea that, you know, there's another theory in there that in this period of time there was an earth and then a refilling of the earth that's going to have to take place. In other words, he's created his creation and then so on. It's not a replenish. It is the idea of filling for the first time. It's not, you know, the idea of replenishing is that you've got a shelf that you have stocked with food, and you've pulled all the food off, and you say, go replenish the stock. Well, that's not what this word means. Now, later we'll see the idea of replenishing again after the ark. But here, this is a filling. It's the same word that's used in Exodus chapter 40 and verse 34 after the tabernacle was constructed. And it says, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. The glory of God was not there prior to the construction. It was after that it was constructed that he filled it. It wasn't a refilling of it, and nor is this. This idea is not a replenish, as the King James would suggest, but a filling, as the New King James correctly words it. But also, day seven. Let's look quickly at day seven over in chapter two. Let's those first three verses, and gives us our seventh day. And in day seven, God rested in his heaven, our song would teach our children.
Thus the heavens and the earth and all the host of them were finished. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had done. And he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all of his work which God had created and made.
All right. You know, if we just disregard Genesis 1 through 11 and we take the rest of the Bible as literal then, and, you know, if we were the theistic evolutionist, in other words, the guy who wants to have enough of God to make himself feel good, but doesn't want to have the whole of God by believing what he said, but we've only disregarded those. Well, then we go to Exodus chapter 20. Mm-hmm. And in Exodus chapter 20, you know, that Decalogue that is given there, God said this, beginning in verse number 9, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But he said, on the seventh day, it is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant, or your maidservant, nor your cattle, nor the stranger that is within your gates. But why? Well, here's what he says. For in 6 days the Lord made the heaven and the earth and the seas and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore, the Lord has blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Okay, so then if it were eon and eons of time there in Genesis chapter 1, well, here's what God uses for the illustration and the example. He says, you're going to do what I did back then. So you're going to have to work, Ryan, eons and eons of time before you get that rest day. Nobody believes that. They believe right here in Exodus, he's talking about 24-hour 7 literal days. And that's exactly what happened in the beginning. God goes to that. But now let's think about a few things about it. Because when you look at this creation, in this little bit of time that we have left, we think about the creation. You know, the heavens that are there, the you know, when you look up and you look out at what God has created, it's a magnificent thing. You know, the psalmist would say in Psalm 8, when I consider the heavens, the works of your fingers, the moons and the stars which you have ordained, what is man that you are mindful of him? The son of man that you visited him. You know, you look at this world, and then you know seem like we're just a little bug on a microscope, something under a microscope, when you consider the vastness of God's whole creation. And it's amazing, and it's awesome. And you think about it, I mean, basically it's mostly space. I thought it was interesting one time. I heard a brother talk about some of these things, and if you think about it, if you took the fact of this universe and how big this universe is, let's just get an idea of how minuscule we are, mm-hmm. in comparison to the size of the universe, and we think about the size of our own galaxy, just our galaxy, not the universe, just the Milky Way galaxy that we live in. And if you could get in a vehicle and travel at the speed of light, that's 186,000 miles per second. If you could travel at 5.8 trillion miles a year, that's how many miles you would travel going the light speed, 5.8 trillion miles a year, it would take you 100,000 years to travel from one edge of the Milky Way galaxy to the other edge of the Milky Way galaxy, traveling at the light of speed. I mean, speed of light. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you think about the sun, located in this Milky Way galaxy, it is making a trek around. And, you know, the circuit, if the universe continues, you know, it would take 250 million years to complete one circuit around the galaxy, mm-hmm. you know, if you go that. In our galaxy, there's about 100 billion stars. And the average distance between each star is 30 trillion miles. Mm-hmm. When you think about even in our own solar system, that poor little planet that wasn't a planet that then became a planet again, Pluto. Mm-hmm. Pluto's orbit around the solar system, it's an 8 billion miles in diameter, just Pluto, just in our own solar system, not our galaxy, just there in our solar system. I mean, it is amazing how big it is. And all of this was created by the Word of God. Psalm 33, 6 through 9, by the Word of the Lord were the heavens made, and all the host of them by the breath of His mouth. You know, God breathed out the stars and the heavens and the planets and the moons and the sun. And He said, because of that, let all the earth fear the Lord, and let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of Him. For He spoke, and it was done. He commanded, and it stood fast. But when you think about how vast our creation is and how minuscule we are, mm-hmm. it ought to make us stop and realize what an awesome God we serve.
Along those same lines, I heard one time someone was talking about, you know, all those, that space in our universe. And here the sun in our galaxy is a medium-sized star.
Oh, exactly.
And yet you can fit 1.3 million Earths inside of our sun. And so, you, even comparison, that the Earth is already just a little speck of in that grand scale.
Well, if you took the sun, basically picture it this way: make a 15-foot diameter. Okay, there's the sun, 15-foot mm-hmm. diameter. The Earth would be a golf ball.
Mm-hmm.
That's how big it would be. If you held, you know, so I mean, you can see that it is overwhelming, and it's a medium size. It's not a large star. But when we also look at this, you know, that's what He says in Psalm 19 in verse number 1. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows forth His handiwork. Mm-hmm. I mean, He says, look up, people, and you can see there is a God. Now, when we consider that, if we continue reading what He says there in Psalm 19, He also points out in verse number 2, day unto day utter speech, and night unto night shows forth knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're here in East Texas, if you're over in Kenya, mm-hmm. if you're in New Zealand, if you're in Taiwan, you know what? The heavens declare the glory of God. He is the great creator. It is only the fool. And that's the thing about it. It's easier. Satan's already got this figured out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if Satan tells people there is no God, only the fool will follow.
Mm-hmm.
So it's best to deceive man by saying there is a God, and he's a God who loves you and lets you just do what you want.
Mm-hmm.
We need to understand, as Daniel 2 and 28 says, there is a God in heaven, and he is an awesome God, and he is an amazing God.
I don't want to tread on where you may be going.
No, no.
But that same idea of Psalm 8, Psalm 19, Romans 1:20, that's the interesting thing to me about Genesis 1 is, as others have commented, God didn't set out as maybe if man was writing this and say, let me give you a background and tell you about God. What Genesis 1 does, let me tell you about God by what he did,
mm-hmm.
and look at his creation. This is who God is. And so he starts off, and he doesn't give us that theological discussion of God, but he shows us his power, his sovereignty, his creative power and ability. He shows us what he's done, and that continues to be evident.
And he was able to do it because of the power that he had. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's that... Jeremiah 10 and verse 12, he has made the earth by his power. He has established the world by his wisdom. Mm-hmm. And so when we look at his creation, we can see the awesome power it took for the creation of this universe, but also the wisdom that is established in this mm-hmm. creation. And, you know, that's what is an amazing thing. When you look at the fingerprint of God on the creation, some would want to say, well, there was just this, you know, big bang that took place and a chaotic explosion. And in the explosion of chaos, all of this was created. Well, that makes absolutely no mm-hmm. sense at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, next time you go buy something that says assembly required, well, why don't you just get home and open it up and throw it as high as you can into the garage and say, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things do not come about that way. And then... the problem is this, when you think about scientific law, scientific law states that you can't get something from nothing. If there was ever a time when there was absolutely nothing, you couldn't have something.
Mm-hmm.
And so there, where did the Big Bang come from? You know, they have a problem with that. But the fact is there is order in creation. There is wisdom in creation. Proverbs 3 and verse 19, the Lord by wisdom has founded the earth, and by understanding he has established the heavens. And science consistently gives evidence to a divine creator. Notice a few aspects of it. You know, the idea, you mentioned Romans 1 and verse 20.
Mm-hmm.
Or Romans chapter 1, the invisible things of God from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made. In other words, you can look
mm-hmm.
at what is there. You know, the clock, there's a clockmaker. You know, the argument of that. If you see, you know, even if you've never seen the individual, you know that there's somebody who has created it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can see it by his creation. And when we look at it, let's think about a few things again about this earth and this world that we live on. The earth, it orbits around the sun, and it takes 365 1/4 days to make that track. And that's why, you know, that every fourth year we get a leap year, because we've got to make up for that extra day that's there that it takes to get around. So we have that. But that means that the earth is traveling around the sun at 66,000 miles per hour. That's what we're doing. And so the earth, as it travels on this course at 66,000 miles an hour, it travels about 584,020,178 miles in that course. That orbit is that large. Now, when you think about that, every mile that it travels, that the Earth travels, it's almost a straight line. Now, that doesn't, you know, maybe doesn't compute to us, because you think about a mile, you know, that's not That's a long ways. And it looks like a straight line. Well, you can't make an orbit if you're going in a straight line. But it has a slight arc. But that arc is so slight in that 1 mile that it only deviates from a straight line by 1/9 of an inch in a mile. Now, I don't know if, you know, guys who have built things, you know, try to frame up a house and build the house. You know, if you've got a 30-foot wall, and right there at about 6 inches, you're 1/9 of an inch off. Over at the other side, that house is not going to come out the way that you want it. And if the earth, if it veered off in either direction by just a little bit, if it were 1/8 of an inch instead of 1/9 of an inch, if it were 1/8 of an inch, then we would come too close to the sun and burn up. If it were 1/10 of an inch, you know, the other direction, then what would we have? We'd get too far away and we'd freeze to death. The Earth is traveling at 93, it's setting perfectly, rather, at 93 million miles away from the sun. Just by accident? Well, if it were 10% closer, then we would burn up. If it were 10% further away, we'd freeze to death. It's a perfect distance. The Earth is a perfect distance from the moon. The moon's 240,000 miles away from the Earth, and that's perfect. And why is it so important? Because of the tidal pools that take place. You know, they talk about people worry about tsunamis and things of that nature. Well, if the moon was a little bit closer, we'd have tides that would go over cities. It's perfect. It's perfect the way that it is. And it's perfect because, you know, if we took the moon back just a little bit, then the oceans would become stagnated. They wouldn't move the way that they ought to. And that's where we get about 50% of our breathable oxygen comes from life of the sea, plant life in the sea. So everything is perfect. Our atmosphere is perfect, 21% oxygen, not just by luck. There's a guy, I know I'm going to butcher his name. He's a French mathematician. It's Le Comte de Noy. And he is a mathematician, deals with the laws of probability. And he said this, and he's not a, I'm not sure. He said, he examined these laws of probability for a single molecule of high dissymmetry to be formed by the action of chance. In other words, the Big Bang Theory, and if you can have one single molecule. And Dinoy found that, on average, the time needed to form one such molecule on our terrestrial globe would be about 10 to the 253 power. That's 10 followed by 253 zeros, okay, that number. Billions of years. It would take that many, if you multiply the figure, if you could even say whatever that number was, and I don't even know what it would be if you hadn't got that high. But then he said, that's for one. He continued, he said, now let us admit that no matter how small the chance it could happen, one molecule could be created in such an astronomical odds of chance. However, one molecule is of no use. Hundreds of millions of identical ones are necessary. Thus, we either admit the miracle or doubt the absolute truth of science. And here's a scientist. Here's what he's saying. He said, the laws of probability are against you. The idea that you have this, you know, there even if there was the most minuscule chance that you could, this one molecule could happen, it does no good. You have to have millions and millions of those. And therefore, we're either going to have to deny the absolute truth of science, or we're going to have to admit the miracle of creation. And science always points to the miracle of creation, the fact that God created this wonderful world for man. And you know what? When we think about it, you know, God, even in his creation, he shows and demonstrates how much he loves us. We always told our kids, you know, God could have made it look like a parking lot. We wouldn't be the wiser. you know, but he didn't. He cares for us, and he cares for us in a way of perpetual generations that were going to take place there in Genesis 1 and verse 12. Mm-hmm. Yielding its seed after its kind, you know, these plant life and these things were there, and he did it for us.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing I've stressed before, is it's not spoken, but you see God's love, his care throughout that creation already in the things that he's provided for us. And I've done the same thing, you know. Could God have made a world black and white? But he made colors that we enjoy. He made variety of foods and fruits and things that we have, again, for our pleasure. Yes, it shows forth his glory. It shows forth his power. But he ultimately did it for us. We're the ones that benefit from it. Mm-hmm. And so throughout all of that, we see his love as well.
And, you know, even in chapter 2, when you talk about the home and those things that are going on with Adam and Eve, mm-hmm. you see that. It wasn't the fact that he said you can only eat one tree. Mm-hmm. He said you can eat any tree you want. Mm-hmm. He didn't just make, you know, the one thing. He didn't just make it, you know, just a static place. It wasn't just, you know, so plain and black and white and flat and nothing. He gave this that is beauty mm-hmm. and the abundant life. Mm-hmm. That you can have. I mean, God has given us these things that we can enjoy them. I mean, but it's not to become our goal,
right?
You know, as well. This place cannot compare to the beauties of heaven, and so even when you see the portrait of heaven, he uses those things that man most desires mm-hmm. here. And shows that it is nothing but building material. You know, I always thought it was so interesting, you know, when he paints a picture of the heavenly realm, he says that in order for our earthly minds to understand, he uses physicals, and he says that they're streets of gold. Mm-hmm. And remember what Jesus said? He said, if a salt has lost its savor, mm-hmm. then it's good for nothing to be cast out under the feet of men and trodden upon. It's nothing but road material. Mm-hmm. It's pavement. It's asphalt. It's no good anymore. You use it for that. And where's that gold that man desires, that which man has desired most for years and for centuries? No longer any good. God has given us something grand and beautiful and blessed by this creation that he has given. And in return, again, when we consider, you know, what God has done, again, let's think about Psalm 33, verses 6 through 9. By the word of the Lord, the heavens were made, and all the hosts that were in them, by the breath of his mouth, God spoke it into being. And so, therefore, let all the earth fear the Lord, and let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of him. Fear God, keep his commandments. This is the whole of man, we find in Ecclesiastes 12. Why? Because God spoke, and it was done, and he commanded, and it stood fast. And this whole world will continue moving and continue revolving because of the long-suffering of God. Mm-hmm. You know, Peter's going to deal with that in 2 Peter chapter 3. They're going to be those who say, you know, where's the promise of his coming? All things continued as it was from the beginning till now. He says they're willfully ignorant of the fact of the flood, but it's the long-suffering of God. God's not slack concerning his promise, as some men count slackness, but is long-suffering toward us, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. Mm-hmm. You know, and so we need to take advantage of that long-suffering and love and make things right with God even when we have the opportunity.
Right.
Well, time has expired for us this morning. We're glad that you've been with us here on Mornings for the Master as we try to kick off things for this new year. 2017, we're trying to go through the Old Testament. This morning we had a look at Genesis chapter 1, looking at the creation. Lord willing, tomorrow we'll look at the home in Genesis chapter 2, I believe.
Might throw out here as well, if you visit, the simplest way to do it is go to the on-demand section, look for Mornings for the Master, and there is a link there. Next to the program image, and you can get a calendar of where we're going, and so you can keep up with where we're going to be the next day, as I believe you mentioned, you know, we have to move a little faster than we did through the New Testament. So that'll help you keep on line of where we're going next. So.
All right. And Ryan's working on getting things up from last year's.
And that's all up as well.
Is it up now? Okay.
If you visit the on-demand section right there at the very top, you'll see a long-term archives now.
Okay.
And all of those New Testament lessons are posted from last year that you can go back and catch any chapter from Matthew 1 to Revelation 22. So
use that to your benefit. You know, maybe you've got a class coming up or you've got some questions in that chapter. Go over there, find that section, study through that with us, even on those days. Till next time, we hope that you have a great and a blessed day. But don't forget, tune in just in a little while for Good News Today with Jim Dearman, followed by Reflections Upon the Precious Book Divine with Rick Popejoy and other hosts. Tomorrow with Ryan and Chip, Chapter 2, The Home. Until next time, have a great day.
Listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.